can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
Welcome to issue 54 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that's not dead, the hosts just smell that way. I'm one of those smelly co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm the other smelly co-host, David McVeigh.
In this issue, Saga is banned and then not again, raising the question, are there digital gatekeepers to sex in comics? Meanwhile, Man of Steel opens up the DC Cinematic Universe, then all the latest headlines, plus what we've been reading this week and some new music, and our kick-ass pick of the week, the classic, The Death of Captain Marvel by Jim Starlin. This is Behind the Panels.
For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just
so, yeah, that was a slight U-turn from what we normally play at
Not
that point.
What I expected.
No, no. That was from Monty Python, of course, Life of Brian. And this, highly appropriate, of course, because, you know, always look on the bright side of death, which I guess Captain Marvel didn't do.
Well, actually, when we get into the book, we'll talk about that because I think he did come to terms.
No, but he is dead.
He is dead. Okay, granted. But then again, he's a comic book character. And even though he is still renowned as being one of those characters who has managed to stay dead, let's never say never.
That's exactly right. But it's a really good read, and we'll get into that in a minute. But before we do, let's take a look at a vintage clip of the week to maybe a different kind of Captain Marvel.
I am Shazam.
My name is...
All is known to me. Your name is Billy Batson. You did not pry into the secret of the Scorpion. That is why I am here.
But where did you come from?
Out of the past, my son. Down through the ages to guard the secret of the Scorpion.
You've been alive all these years?
What you call life returned to me when your friends violated the tomb of the Scorpion.
Well, they meant no harm.
Then they should have obeyed the inscription on the tomb. The harm has been done. It is your duty to see that the curse of the Scorpion is not visited upon innocent people.
My duty?
Yes. So long as the Golden Scorpion may fall into the hands of selfish men, it is the duty of Captain Marvel to protect the innocent from its evil use.
But who is Captain Marvel?
You are, my son. All that is necessary is to repeat my name, Shazam. By its repetition, you will become Captain Marvel and take on the virtues you see recorded there.
Yeah, okay. Wrong Captain Marvel.
Yeah, slightly, but that's all right.
But he was Captain Marvel.
But he said duty.
He said duty. Yeah, I was thinking that too. That was, of course, well, maybe not of course, probably not everyone's heard of that one. That was Adventures of Captain Marvel, episode one, Curse of the Scorpion. Well, as you heard several times in the Curse of the Scorpion from 1941. Yeah, that was a serialized set of movies. The whole Captain Marvel thing is quite interesting because that was originally Captain Marvel was a Fawcett character. And then I think, if I get this right, DC actually sued them because they thought the character was too close to Superman.
Right.
And then DC eventually ended up owning the character. But then there was, but during the time that there was a legal dispute over the name Captain Marvel,
Marvel snuck in.
Marvel came in and then you, and used the name Captain Marvel. So since about the late '60s, early '70s, DC's been promoting their Captain Marvel as Shazam to the point where during the New 52, they actually rechristened him Shazam completely.
Yeah, there's no more Captain Marvel anymore. He's so, just Shazam.
Yeah, so the only Captain Marvel we're talking about is Captain Mar-Vell.
Yes.
From the Kree Empire. But that's that. So that
or
was
Marv, as somebody called him at one point.
Marv. Hey, Marv.
Hey, Marv.
It wasn't Wolverine, was it?
No, it was Rick.
Oh, it was Rick.
Rick called him Marv.
Of course, Rick.
Point.
Yeah, because I'm not that familiar with the characters. So it's really interesting when they get into that whole dual identities thing. And
the Rick Jones thing, we'll get that to that in the book. The Rick Jones thing just cracked me up when he came in because I got to tell you, I'm not really au fait in Captain Marvel, but we'll come back to that. And finding out Rick Jones was involved, because Rick Jones is involved in other things. And
it
was like, really? He really gets around for a normal guy.
Is Rick Jones like the snapper car of the Marvel U? Yeah.
He's the go-to sidekick.
All right. Before we go on to that, though, we're going to talk about what else we've been reading, really, this last week.
Well, looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
Which is, again, exactly what we've been doing the last week. What we do every week, really. We read between the lines, bitches.
That's what we do, and behind the panels.
And behind the panels.
Between the lines and
I think we should change the name of the show to Behind the Panels, Bitches.
I'm sure iTunes would love that.
Yeah, well, actually, that brings up a story a little bit later on. A couple of things came out this week. Of course, there was a new Batman, new Scott Snyder. That's fantastic. There was a new issue of Sex, which was also great. But the book that I wanted to talk about was Batman and Red Robin, number 19. This is Batman and Robin number 19, effectively.
I haven't read this yet, and I'm very curious to hear what you say about this, because I think that the title is actually slightly misleading. Is that right?
The title, well, the Red Robin does appear in it, but the WTF moment for this book, because, DC this month are doing all those covers. That's
gimmick.
Very much. Well, New 52.
Yeah, I think we need a soundboard clip that's a good gimmick.
I think we just need to say New 52, and that just covers gimmicks from this point onwards. But, David, you should...
Just hang on to your lariat!
I will.
Are you hanging on to it?
Yeah.
Because the WTF moment on the cover was actually Carrie Kelly appearing in costume. Where now, Carrie Kelly is the Robin of the...
Is Dark... that like Earth 31, though?
Earth 31, Dark Knight Returns. Well, the Earths are all a little bit scrambled. It's a bit shake and bake post-Flashpoint. So I'm wondering whether this actually... Because she is actually Carrie Kelly. Now, she's not there as Robin, although she's dressed as Robin for a fancy dress at one point. She's been secretly helping Damian out with his homework, obviously before he died.
Conveniently that we never saw this.
We never saw this, but now she's turned up, so... Bruce Wayne's kind of trying to find out who she is and what she might be. I think they're going to be dropping a lot of these little red herrings in there to say, this is going to be the next Robin. This is going to be the next Robin until, they finally decide, who Robin's going
to
be.
I think when it comes to the Batman and Robin book at the moment...
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Yeah. we don't know. I mean, look, there will be a Robin, of course. If there's a Batman, there'll always be a Robin. But I think maybe there'll be maybe they're trying to do bring it in line with the Nolan universe. And
could we not have a Robin for a little while? Because we already have four of them kicking around out there, don't we? Three of them kicking around.
That's true. We do have a few of them. But so you can afford to lose one or two.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a really good issue by itself anyway. And it's been, last month's one was the Silent issue. So this is a really good follow-up to it. So, look, go and check that out. There's a bunch of stuff out this week as well. But, David, what else have you been reading?
I was actually catching up on the latest issues of Grace Randolph's Superbia.
Oh, of course,
which is basically an ongoing now. The first volume was only, the four issues or whatever it was. And now we're up to issue six of the second volume. And it's actually turning into a pretty interesting little book because they're developing the characters. They've got more time to develop these characters now. We're starting to introduce a supervillain, quote-unquote, air quotes, supervillain type concept and so forth. So it's actually not a bad little book. It's from Boom Studios. We've talked about it before on the show. Worth having a look at for a curiosity value, if nothing else, because it's like the soap opera of comic books at the moment.
Okay.
But more importantly than that is actually what I've been watching. After doing X-Men last week and
that was following our Chris Claremont interview.
It really made me want to go back and like catch up on all things X, really. And so I actually went and rewatched X-Men the movie and X-Men 2. I haven't got the X-Men 3 yet, and you know, maybe there are some out there who would say I shouldn't. But it was really, really great watching in particular X-Men 2. And it was that promise of the Phoenix Saga that we never really got.
Yeah.
But it was so good watching it. When she does, I mean, spoilers for a film that is now, what, 10 years old, whatever it is?
About that, yeah.
Yeah, about that. That moment at the end when she basically ignites, when she's holding back the water, you sit there and go, here it comes. And then we just never really got that moment, because we should have had the whole Firebird in X-Men 3, and if Singer had done it, I think that's where we were going.
Yeah, yeah.
But Brett Ratner dropped the ball, and Dark Phoenix never quite lived up to the promise of X-Men 2.
No, she was more emo than...
True, but it reminded me...
They do that in the third part of every film franchise.
Go emo.
Go emo.
But it did remind me how good a character Alan Cumming's Nightcrawler was.
Oh.
And I am really, really hoping that they get him back, because there has been a lot of talk about him coming back.
Yeah,
look,
it's kind of hard to do. Yeah, it's hard to do Days of Future Past without Nightcrawler.
Problem is, I read something the other day, because I was always wondering why he didn't come back for X-Men 3. Apparently, he had a lot of problems with the makeup. And he really didn't enjoy it. And he really didn't enjoy the makeup that they had to put on his body and everything. And that's why he didn't come back.
You never know, they might be able to mocap it these days.
Exactly. So we'll see what they do. And I mean, they might, they've come, you know, there's been advances in makeup technology and so forth. So you never know. He might come back. And I really hope he does, because he was so good as Nightcrawler.
Well, for other reviews, go and check out behindthepanels.net, of course. This week we've looked at Batman 19, Batman and Red Robin 19, Colonize number 1, Strange Little Book, Hawkeye 9, Saga 12, which we'll be talking a little bit later, and Sex number 2. In the meantime, why don't we move on to a little bit of news?
What a scoop!
In fact, I just alluded to this, the saga number 12. Now, yeah. bit of a saga itself this week, as it was quote-unquote banned from the comiXology.
And this follows on the heels that Sex 1 was banned.
That's correct.
So, yeah.
Now, both cases, both Image books, both depicting graphic sex scenes, but in both cases, both depicting graphic same-sex scenes.
Which could be coincidental.
I think it's coincidental, but, you know, it obviously raised a bunch of questions. The fallout of this is that it's now back in comiXology. comiXology, originally there was a post on Image's website and a note from Brian K. Vaughan, the writer of Saga, saying that, you know, that Apple had banned this, that iOS, the policy that they wouldn't allow, it's Apple's policy that they wouldn't
because
allow sexually
explicit. Because of the in-app purchase structure of comiXology, they had to adhere to App Store rules. App Store rules do not allow sex.
Exactly. Now, this blew up on the net over the next couple of days. We wrote a piece. Go to behindthepanels.net, and I wrote a little piece about this. And I still feel very strongly about this, despite the fact that the next day, both Vaughan and Image came out, and comiXology CEO, in fact, came out and said, no, it was the comiXology misinterpreting the guidelines. We've actually resubmitted it, it's in there now. Along with Sex Number 1 has been put there. Black Kiss 2, another Black Kiss 2
made it. Wow, I've read that.
Yeah, I know. And that's very... And there's another...
And as we pointed out last week, the Pro is also there, which is...
There doesn't seem to be quite the same outcry over really violent. So, I mean, as they pointed out in some of these other stories, Walking Dead has been going through no problems for 111 issues.
Can I point out, though, that that is the hypocrisy of America, though? Mm. That violence has never been an issue. They are so Puritan when it comes to sex,
Well,
though.
It's that old Jack Nicholson thing he used to say about, you know, in America, if you suck on a women's nipple, you get an X rating. Yes. And if you cut it off, you get an M. Yeah. You know, whatever, you get a PG-13.
PG-13, yeah. And I'm not bagging at America. I mean, I'm American, so I'm not bagging at America. What? How dare you be there? About Americans in general, it's just that... It's an overall thing about their censorship. Their censorship is bizarre.
My problem with this is more to do with the fact of digital gatekeepers and the fact that someone is making this taste call at all, that it is, as we increasingly move towards a place where we have digital comics will be the norm for reading comics. And at the moment, our norm for reading comics is through apps like comiXology and through the App Store and through these platforms. The point is, if those platforms are making a call about what's good taste and what's bad taste, it's not an equal situation. You're not getting a point where you can walk into a store And pick up a issue of Sex or pick up an issue of Saga.
However, if you go back in time to, let's say, the 50s or 60s, there was a point where they would keep things like the horror comics under the counter.
They kept them under the counter, but they were there.
That's true.
So you could ask for them. Here, it's a point where they're not even letting you have the item at all.
What about the comics code, though, which effectively eliminated?
That was different because that was self-censorship within the industry. And this is similar in a way. But
sorry, I'm just playing Devil's Avocado here.
No. I think that's absolutely right. But the problem with Devil's Avocados is they get squishy after a few days.
And a bit brown.
Exactly right. There's nothing you want. There's nothing worse.
But if
worse.
You take the seed out, you can grow another avocado.
There's nothing worse than a brown Devil's Avocado. Mm. but the thing is, I mean, the point stands that there is at some point someone making this decision who isn't the consumer. And I think that that's the line that I've drawn here. And in fact, not only are they not making the decision, they're not able to make the decision because it's just not offered to them. And I think ultimately, people aren't going to blame their devices because they've just gone out and spent a mint on a new iPad or a new Android tablet or something. They're not going to blame that. They're going to blame the content providers. Mm. And they'll take their wares elsewhere. They might go to the illegal places. Or it could be a situation where the actual publishers offer it directly, bypassing things like
which
the App Store and Comixology.
Which is what Dark Horse is doing, isn't it? Is it Dark
Horse?
I think
so.
Their app is separate, and they don't put their stuff out on Comixology.
Which is, yeah.
They're actually feeding their own stuff. My question is, Comixology is available on different platforms.
Mm-hmm.
What were these titles censored on the Android platform?
It's interesting.
I would like to know. If anybody out there knows the answer
yes,
to that.
Yes, I didn't know about that. Yeah,
I would
yeah.
really like to know whether, because that would really lock down whether or not the digital gatekeeper in this particular point is Comixology.
I'm assuming it they were, because I think in their statement back, Comixology said we misinterpreted Apple's policy.
Right.
So, well, we too stringently applied it, I think was the thing. Anyway, that was...
But I agree with you. I think any time you have a third party controlling the flow of information, that is a dangerous thing. Whether it be a government, whether it be a corporation, makes no difference. But if they are controlling the flow of information, that is not a freedom of speech, so
because,
to speak.
And I know this sounds kind of superficial in a way, but I think it is something to be genuinely frightened about.
Hmm.
Because we're talking about one issue here, and it is sexually explicit. And no, we don't want it in the hands of children and all that sort
sure
of stuff.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking.
I mean, we don't want it. I mean, remember the furor around the Catwoman number one issue?
Mm-hmm.
The whole...
Archie and Veronica blush.
I remember
thing.
It well.
Yeah, I mean, that whole thing came out of... somebody else's understanding of what a comic should be, you know. So this is kind of, you know, that sort of nanny state kind of mentality in a way. But it's not a nanny state; it's a nanny corporation in this particular instance.
And I mean, anybody who's been a long-term listener of any of the Geek Actually shows know that I am a massive advocate, for lack of a better word, of anti-censorship. I mean, we've been for the last 4.5 years, we've been talking about not censoring stuff. And that doesn't mean that, you know, children should just be having pornography. That's not what we're saying. We're just saying that there should be...
They should have good pornography.
They should have good pornography. Absolutely. No. We're just saying that, I mean, yes, there should be guidelines put in place, but if a consenting adult wants to watch pornography or read a comic book that has a sexually explicit scene in it, then they shouldn't be hindered because... What was that saying? The saying is banning... Stuff is like banning steak because a child can't chew or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
a great quote. I love that. But, you know, it's like this blanket ban that goes out. And it's like, okay, that's great for the children, but what about us?
Yeah.
You know? So I have a real problem with it, and I have a real problem with this, but I'm glad it's gone through. Now,
yeah, look,
but it is something to keep an eye on.
In the wake of this, as I said, a lot of those other ones that were previously banned have come back in to the App Store. And interestingly enough, Sex Number 2, which actually has an orgy scene, never had a problem in the first place.
But shows very little. Because I had a look through it. It actually shows very little.
Sex number one was quite graphic.
you could say that.
Okay, now for the rest of the news headlines, which today are brought to you by the new Teen Titans Go theme.
God help us.
Remixed by Beastie Boys collaborator Mix Master Mike, and then further remixed a little bit by me. So let's kick it off.
Man of Steel to open up DC Cinematic Universe, says Jeff Robinoff, president of Warner Brothers Pictures Group. Expect a big announcement about the future in the next few weeks.
A sequel to the Dread 3D movie has been teased by 2000 AD, but in comic book form. Look for that in September.
Marvel teases Age of Ultron UC for July, featuring something big, purple, and hungry. We're thinking Galactus. What about you?
I'm thinking Galactus as well. Marvel is also returning to the AVX universe with a What If AVX 1-4 miniseries to be released weekly in July, but they're also cancelling the Winter Soldier that month. A reboot surely due with a new movie coming
out. Absolutely, I like Winter Soldier. Also in July, look for a new Image series from Matt Fraction called Satellite Sam. Set in the 1950s, it promises sex, death, live TV.
Ooh, I'm sold already. Finally, this has been doing the rounds all this week on the interwebs. Batman Begins was screened on ABC Family in the US, and their take on how to promote that show is a little bit different to the way I remember the film. Let's see if you recognize that.
Keep watching back-to-back Batman. And tonight, an ABC Family premiere event.
It's not who I am underneath, but what I do that defines me.
It's a new kind of beginning for a legendary hero.
Does it come in black?
He fights for family and lives for love.
I never stopped thinking about you.
Christian Bale and Katie Holmes. Batman Begins. Premieres tonight at 8, 7 Central. Only on ABC Family.
Could he be any more excited?
And what does Batman do?
He fights for family and lives for love.
That was my memory of Batman Begins. Does everyone remember that?
I remember that. I remember that. They make it sound a little bit like freeze is coming.
I remember that scene at the end when he has Ra's al Ghul. Spoilers, people. And he says, "I don't have to kill you, but I don't have to love you either." At first I thought that was actually a bit of a fake, but it turns out that was a real ad. So for all those other updates,
I think the biggest issue here, before you say you're a little stinger, the biggest issue here is it's not a family film.
It's not. But ABC Family decided that he lives for love, and I love that. I love that take on it.
I think so. I think we live for love.
I love it, but it sort of brings up all those alternate trailers that were on the net. You know, and they did The Shining as a you know, family comedy, yes. And you know,
or The Sure Thing is a horror film.
Which is my favorite one. So look, for all the latest updates, head to behindthepanels.net, click on news, and you'll hear all those stories in full, plus a whole lot more. Meanwhile, David, I think you should hit some girl from Ipanema, because I feel some plugging coming on.
Cool.
Hey, gang. How's it going? We're going great. You know what would be even greater? If you bought some of our swag. Because at Behind the Panels, we love creating a free show every single week. We love sitting in a hot studio and sweating and doing all
I'm
sorts of
now.
Crazy banter back and forth. And you're entertained, sure, but what you know what would be even more entertaining? Wearing a t-shirt with our faces on it.
Or drinking from a cup with our faces on it.
That would be awesome,
David. That's almost vaguely disturbing.
David, where could you get these wonderful sounding products that are also vaguely disturbing?
If you shoot over to behindthepanels.net.
That's behindthepanels.net?
Behindthepanels.net. There is actually a big old picture right there that has our t-shirts.
Well, darn tootin', I'm going there now.
Click on that link, take you to the store, buy some stuff, and you'll find t-shirts that have all sorts of great catchphrases on them.
That sounds like
phrases on them.
Well, some of those catchphrases might sound a little bit something like,
"Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into."
One of my favorites.
Or,
"Oh, take your tampon out, Dave."
Actually, no,
I don't think we have that one.
But that sounds like the sort of action that would result in supporting this show.
I think it would. Well, that would help support like storage costs and web costs and doing things like going to places like Supernova and stuff like that.
Well, if you're listening, you should go and do that right now. What are you waiting for?
Well, because they want to hear the rest of the show.
Okay, let's do the rest of the show then.
And then they can do it.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay. And we're back.
David, we didn't really go anywhere.
Okay.
We were actually here the whole time.
Now, remember, that section is also an area where we do feedback. If you want to leave feedback for this show, you can leave it at behind, what is it? Feedback at behindthepanels.net. I almost forgot our address here. Or you can leave a voicemail. Our voicemail Skype ID is Geek Actually, because that's our host. And there is a phone number, but I can't remember off the top of my head. But if you go to behindthepanels.net, that's behindthepanels.net.
That phone number's everywhere.
That phone number's there. You can find it and you can dial it. It's a Sydney-based number and you can leave a voicemail.
And it's about this point in the show where you'd hear your voice
saying something like, hi guys.
Hi guys, I've been listening to the show for ages and I just wanted to know, are either of you single? See ya.
And I'd have to say no, but that's beside the point.
Yeah.
And you could hear your own voice. So send your, or there's one last place you can get in touch with us.
Oh, you can also hit up facebook.com/behindthepanels.
Really? We have a Facebook page?
We do.
Wow.
And you're not liking it, so go and like it.
Go like it now.
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 Unless you're driving, pull over first. Well, David, it's that time of the week where we like to bring things down a little bit, get even mellower than that mellow that
I
we just
more
had.
Mellow and fall asleep at this point.
Actually, I think this next book might harsh our mellow slightly because it's time for a bit of this.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's
the pick of the week.
And it's not funny.
And it's not funny. It's not awfully funny at all. That's the alternate version because this week we're doing The Death of Captain Marvel by Jim Starlin. Now, this was the first of Marvel's graphic novel line, released in 1982, I believe.
Yeah, 81, 82. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
And we've spoken about the graphic novel line before on the show. It actually came back up a few weeks ago when we last had Dave Longo on.
Mm.
And we were talking about Marvel starting the graphic novel line again with their new... series that's coming out later this year. There's an Avengers book and I think there's the Once Upon a Time graphic novel. So this was a great series. It ran for about, I think there's about 80 of them all up.
And these were actual graphic novels. They weren't just collections of comic books put together. These were actually printed on really nice quality paper. They were softbacks, but they were that kind of card softbacks.
They call a prestige format.
A prestige format now. Yeah. And when they came out, they were different because at that point in time, all comics were printed on that kind of cheap paper with that three-color process with the dots and everything.
I've got a couple of them. They're actually slightly bigger too. They're more magazine-sized. Yep,
slightly bigger. I actually collected a few of these back in the 80s. I had Sensational She-Hulk, and I had this one, actually.
I've actually got this one.
Yeah, I don't have this one anymore. I've got this digitally now, but I had this one. I had a whole bunch of them, and they were really, really nice. They were a special event, and you got to consider that, I mean, this was $5.95. That was a lot of money.
Yeah, at the time.
I mean, at the time, comic books were literally under a dollar.
Still only 25 cents.
Well, not quite here. In America, maybe, but not here. But they're about a dollar something. I think they were $1.25 or something
Sounds
like that.
Sounds about right.
And these were $5.95. These were expensive. These were a teenager. When I was a teenager, this was my entire pocket money in one go. You know? But they were really nice. They were really pretty to look at. And what's happened over the last decade, I think, is the graphic novel has been hijacked. I think a lot of this is due to things like The Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen and so forth, which are now considered graphic novels, but were actually issue-by-issue releases.
Exactly.
And they've been compiled together, whereas these were written as a standalone book. Boom. Out. Mm. The closest thing you could equate these to is probably an annual, you know, but better quality.
Yeah.
But that's the history of these. Now let's talk about this book.
Now... rather than us starting to talk about this book, there's actually a series that David and I love to death, which is Ink Alter Egos Exposed.
Would they release it on DVD already?
I wish they'd release it on DVD. This was a great little mini documentary series, about 10 episodes, each week taking a different aspect of comics. And they did one issue just entirely on, I think it was the second issue, just entirely on death in comics.
Yep.
And... Death of Captain Marvel formed a large part of that. And so I've pulled a little bit of a clip out of this of a couple of people. The first voice you'll hear is Jim Starlin, the author himself, talking. You'll also hear Mike Mignola. You'll hear a comics critic in there as well. And the final voice you'll hear and try to understand is Grant Morrison. So let's just have a listen to this before we start talking about the book.
Captain Marvel died of cancer. The reason that happened... And I had been planning all these other endings for that particular story, such as the bombs and the bullets and that. But my own father passed away from cancer, and this was sort of my way of working through therapy on it. Instead of paying a shrink, I got paid by Marvel to write a story about it instead.
The thing that was always sad to me in comics was when somebody killed a character well and then somebody else brought him back. If you kill him really well, I'd kind of like to see him stay gone, because nothing to me is better than a great ending. And, you know, Jim Starlin killed Captain Marvel with cancer, and it was beautiful. And I said, man, keep him dead. It was such a beautiful wrap-up to the character.
He deserved to die fighting, and he didn't. He died from something that kills so many of us every single year, that it really brought a lot of humanity to comics, and that even this tremendous superhero couldn't beat it. I mean, his strength was not sufficient enough. He didn't have the right tools.
I could see that, obviously, Starlin had been through something with someone dying himself, because it was too real. The idea of Captain Marvel going through a death by cancer was ridiculous. But at the same time, there was true emotion in it, because I think Starlin was actually talking about something that happened to him, you could tell. So, yeah, I mean, I was in two minds at that. I thought it was a terrible superhero story, but a great story. He should just have written about his dad or his granddad, whoever it was that had affected him in that way.
It sold so well for Marvel that nobody could actually get down on us for what we were doing. Some of the other editors who were up there started finding out what we had done, and they were horrified by the cancer aspect of it. By then, it was too late. We were at the printer, and there was nothing much they could do about it.
I love those sort of stories where they go, too late, dude.
So I think we heard a few of those from Chris Claremont last week as well. It's kind of like, we killed off Jean Grey and it's too late.
Yeah, it's done. Yeah. It's history. But what they actually said in that clip is very, very true, which is it was an amazing death, an amazing conclusion to a very powerful character. And at that point, you sit there and go, I want to see him stay dead. Because that was an end. I agree with him. A great ending.
The thing is, I mean, Captain Marvel was never a massive, massive, massive character for Marvel Comics, despite his name.
Unless you were a reader of Cosmic.
Exactly. Yeah. And Jim Starlin, who we should say is pretty much the architect of the Cosmic universe. He's created so many of these characters. And in fact, he wrote most of the stuff throughout the 70s, 80s and leading up to...
He's the original Guardians guy, wasn't he?
I think so, yeah. And he certainly wrote this, and he wrote all the stuff predating DNA taking over Annihilation Conquest and Nova and Guardians. Then he did the original Annihilation. He was kind of the architect of that, where he pulled together all those cosmic characters that no one cared about. And you can tell how much he cares about these characters just in something like the death of Captain Marvel. Because the beautiful thing about the way this starts is that, you know, like you, I probably didn't know a lot about his backstory going into this. So through the motif of a mini autobiography that he's recording, we don't know why at first. He sort of tells about how he came to Earth and how he was originally there as part of an invasion force and how he ultimately was won over by the goodness of humans. And
then betrayed by his people.
Betrayed by his people, and then became his alien name Mar-Vell was bastardized by humans to become Captain Marvel. Hmm. And so he left being a captain in the Kree Imperial Guard and became a defender, a staunch defender of Earth. And like so many characters that may be second stringers or may be underrated sometimes, this is one of those stories that makes you realize how many parts of the Marvel Universe he's actually touched over the years.
Yes.
The basic story is, given the title, is that Captain Marvel starts off telling his autobiography. Someone says to him something like, you know, you're a bit young to be...
By the way, a spoiler... He dies at the end.
Yes. It's not just hype, you know. Yeah. He does actually die at this. Same as Death of Gwen Stacy. I'm going to spoil
that. Yeah, that was a bit of a spoiler too, yeah.
He just says that he's preparing an audio file for the Avengers and other superheroes on Earth. He said, you're kind of young to be writing your memoirs, aren't you? Perhaps, but you never know, which gets his colleague a little worried at this thing. Turns out that he's got this power that he can see everything.
He's been given a power. So it wasn't one of his original Kree powers. He's been given a cosmic power that allows him to basically see the fabric of the universe. But as he says at one point, he can also turn that inwards.
Yeah. So he suspected for a long time, well, he knows that he's got cancer and that he suspects he's not going to make it. But he confirms this while he's visiting Titan to ensure that... Thanos, who he and Adam Warlock had defeated some years before, was still going to remain firmly locked in his stone slab there. But he confirms on Titan that he's got cancer. And from there, the story takes a very different turn.
And it actually happens very quickly, too. So we go from...
Because we're only talking about a 65-page book here.
That's right. And we go from the first, I think it's 10, almost 15 pages, where he's still being Captain Marvel. He's doing his memoirs. He has a little conflict there in the middle. And even at the end of that conflict, he goes, wow, that took it all out of me.
Yeah, you know, yeah. You really start to see the signs that he's...
But then as soon as he gets the Titan... As soon as they confirm the cancer, or the various other things that different races call it, he basically goes downhill very quickly. It's like he immediately goes, okay, well, I'm dying.
Yeah.
And he goes, and there's that wonderful line where he says, of this life support tunic that I'm wearing now, thank God I could finally take off my tights because I look kind of silly now.
Because he said that he was too big for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some really, really touching moments in here as well along that way. Because I think the reason it happened so quickly is they're saying that the very things that have been keeping him alive, which is his neger bands, have also been slowly killing him because they've mutated the cancer to a point that it can't be treated by anything. Yeah. And he's also got a bit of a tragic love story in the middle of this as well, because Eliseus, which is his partner, who took over from after he'd lost his great love, Una. Eliseus was once a villain who became his great lover. This is this really, really touching moment where his comrade says, have you told her yet?
And he says, about to comment on this section.
And all in captionless panels, you just see this guy watching as he goes out, sits down next to her, they start talking, she hangs her head, hugs him, and just a tear runs down her face. It's a really, really bold move, which you wouldn't have gotten in a single issue.
We didn't need words. We didn't need lots of over-explanation. We already knew.
Given, and think about the contemporaries of this. When we were looking at Chris Claremont's stuff last week, how much dialogue he probably would have put into this.
Yeah.
He would have had this and this was a really bold move. I mean, it seems to me when Marvel does deal with death and compare it to the death of Gwen Stacy, there was that scene we spoke about when we did that episode. That was back in the 30s somewhere, where Mary Jane comes in and he says something to her and she goes to leave, but then she goes, no, just closes the door and
it's silent. And silent, yeah.
Which was very bold for the 60s and 70s and certainly early 80s. So I think that's just a really, really, given how talky the rest of the issue is, it's a particularly powerful moment. But as you said, it goes downhill fairly rapidly. He goes back to Earth to tell Rick about his, what's Rick's last name?
Rick Jones.
Thank you. As we said, that's right. We talked about him before, the snapper
now,
car of the moment.
For anybody who has actually watched the old Hulk TV series, the old Hulk cartoon, the one that actually has the Ain't He Unglamorous song, in that first episode, which is where he gets hit by the gamma bomb, Rick Jones is the boy he goes out to save. So when he goes out into the field and actually pushes the young youth out of the way, which is when he gets hit by the gamma radiation, that's Rick Jones. And in that cartoon, they say the name Rick Jones about 500 times. It's actually, I'll see if I can find the clip for next week where he goes, I'm Rick Jones. Nice to meet you because I'm Rick Jones. It's like, just in case you've forgotten, I'm Rick Jones. And he always refers to himself with both names. So it's never just I'm Rick or I'm Mr. Jones. It's I'm Rick Jones.
He actually had a really interesting series of team-ups because he was following the death of Captain Marvel, which happens at the end of this book. Early days, he was with Hulk and the Avengers. Then he was Captain Marvel's team-up. Then after Marvel...
He was with Captain America for a while, too.
He was with Captain America for a while when he was with the Avengers. When Marvel died, he teamed up with the Hulk again briefly before teaming up with Rom.
Rom!
Yeah, so you're reading some of Rom at the moment. I think you've got
I'm about to take a trip down memory lane with Rom.
Because as we were reading through old issues of Uncanny X-Men, we kept seeing these ads for Rom.
And I remember when I was reading these X-Men the first time around going, I remember reading that. I remember seeing those ads going, that looks interesting, I better read that. And I remember reading some of those it's just like this flood of memories reading this X-Men again. And I thought, I got to reread those ROMs. The question is, will I be able to find those ROMs?
Actually, what's really interesting, I mean, he goes right through. He was still turning up in Fallen Sun, Death of Captain America, World War Hulk. He turned up during...
That's because he's Rick Jones.
During World War Hulk, he inexplicably transformed into a creature resembling the Abomination, calling himself A-Bomb. A-Bomb turns up, and I think A-Bomb is being voiced by Seth Green in that new Agents of Smash
cartoon
that's coming out. So whether that's still going to be Rick Jones, I don't know.
Rick Jones.
This is great. And if you get a chance, people, go and have a look at the Wikipedia entry for Rick Jones. There's a whole section called Rick and Death, where all the brushes he's had with death. Something about killing Marlo by stabbing her with a kitchen knife. That's what? It. Look, unless that's for another show. but this is.
I think we should do a retrospective on Rick Jones.
I think so. Yeah, yeah. We'll do that at upcoming episodes. If there's enough demand for it, Rick Jones. Rick Jones and Death. We'll call it.
Yeah.
This is as we're going back to the book here, Death of Captain Marvel, we'll see that you know, once he's learned of his cancer, he still starts reminiscing and he goes back and talks about the bond that he had with Rick Jones, which is how we got onto this, but then starts to realize he's got very few friends left. Well, he thinks he's got very few friends left and thinks he has more enemies than friends left, and he reminisces about the one person that made his life count for something, which was his defeat of Thanos, along with Adam Warlock, and who comes back later in the book, which is really interesting. But as word gets out, Rick Jones actually then goes and visits the Avengers and gathers together this group of Avengers who, let me see, he gathers together Yellow Jacket, the Black Panther, Vision, Wonder Man, Beast, Iron Man, and Thor, for some reason. All have special scientific or medical knowledge. I'm not familiar that Thor had special scientific or medical knowledge.
No, but can I also point out this?
I will smash his cancer with my hammer.
Can I also point out, though, it's one of my favorite moments in the book, though, because there's that wonderful part where he goes, you guys have got all this power and all these brains and all this sort of stuff, and, you know, why haven't you ever just gone out and, like, defeated cancer? And they all look at each other like, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like, why haven't we?
Which kind of foreshadows the stuff that's in the current run of Indestructible Hulk, which is, you know, Bruce Banner going, you know, I've been trying to beat this Hulk thing for a while. Not very good at it.
But
I am quite good. I just think that Bruce Banner needs to give up on the whole science thing entirely.
Yeah, I think we were talking about Gamma Bananas before.
Yeah, we were. Again, that might end up on a t-shirt.
Because we were actually thinking that Bruce Banner's answer to everything is to just gamma irradiate. Yeah, right.
Like, what should I have for breakfast? Bananas? I'll penetrate them with gamma. Then I'll have a gamma banana.
Gamma coffee, gamma banana. Gamma banana on gamma toast. Gamma rays.
Gamma. So in the wake of them doing nothing, everyone goes back to Titan, where Captain Marvel starts falling apart pretty quickly.
He does, and as I say, he starts wearing the what is it, the life support tunic?
Yes,
which looks very fashionable for a life support
tunic.
It's
pretty awesome, actually.
It is pretty awesome.
So Titan can't cure cancer, but they can make a really fashionable life support tunic.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think there's also a really beautiful, touching moment where what's her name again?
Alicia.
Alicia is sitting at his bedside.
Yes.
And there's that beautiful exchange of dialogue between them where she's saying that she doesn't want to be anywhere else.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, and she's with the person that she loves, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But I think the real turning point for this book, where it really kind of generates a tear, where you sit there and go, this is really sweet, is when everybody starts arriving.
It is. This is the page here. It's like, now just after that moment, in fact, she weeps, he joins her, and then his tears are mixed with tumultuous emotions that haunt his sleep. And then he says, Titan, the moon of Saturn, drifts through space and weeks and time, waiting. Then one day, they begin to arrive. The first ships come from Earth. They're soon joined by the more advanced and exotic ether cutters from outside our solar system. All crafts are immediately identified and cleared for landing, except for one. But finally, even that ship is granted clearance once a certain guarantees of a proper conduct are assured by a passenger on board. And then the next thing is just a splash page of, like, half the Marvel U turning up to greet him. Everyone from Spider-Man, who's obviously hopped on a ship somewhere, to Silver Surfer.
I would like to point out that
Ghost Rider's there.
You made a wonderful observation, though, which was invited the Hulk?
I mean, Bruce Banner could have come, but for some reason, the Hulk and Ghost Rider, for that matter, have turned up.
I didn't
up.
Actually notice Ghost Rider there. There you go.
Namor's turned up, but he's still just wearing his underpants. Like, he hasn't put a shirt on for the trip into space.
No. I would imagine half of these costumes wouldn't be good for space travel.
Colossus is still in his costume. It's a little bit odd, but admittedly, maybe it's like just putting on like your
who's the white-haired girl in the fishnet top?
Yeah, I don't know who she is.
I don't know who that is.
And she's wearing like pink fishnet leggings as well.
I want to know more about this character.
Yeah, I think that's Charlie Xavier right at the back. I see
because the whole X-Men are up there.
I see the bald guy standing in front of Cyclops.
Yep.
Anyway.
Wolverine.
Yep. So they're all there.
And I love the fact that the Human Torch is on fire in a oxygen-rich space station.
So is Ghost Rider.
Yeah, you'd think that would cause problems.
Probably. Ghost Rider you can let slide because he's kind of mystical.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I think Human Torch would have gone flame on and everybody would have just exploded.
Daredevil just doesn't know where he is.
He's going, I was in New York.
What happened?
But yes, no, it's wonderful. But after they all basically come in, pay their respects throughout this issue, we then have this one visitor who is this ship that I'm assuming would not clear. And that, of course, is a Skrull, turns
out. Yes.
Now, this is a really interesting part because, of course, he is a Kree and the Skrull has turned up. And you're thinking to yourself, there's probably a bigger issue here. But no, the Skrull is there because basically he said, you are our biggest adversary. You're our biggest enemy, but we have nothing but respect for you. And he gives him a medal.
He says, no being in the entire galaxy has ever faced our armed might so bravely or thwarted our plans as many times as you have.
Yep.
You are quite possibly the greatest warrior who ever walked the stars. We Skrulls are a martial race and have long respected your skills, deeds, and courage, even though you are our foe. And gives him the Order of the Imperial Council. And which kind of brings up the whole thing that his own people have turned his back on them. And he goes, look, you know, it doesn't matter in the end. I've got
doesn't care.
All these people here. And it is... Within a couple of pages, he's surrounded by all these people.
Can I just say the one thing I will make an observation of this book, though, is I'm so glad they changed Drax's costume.
Yeah,
Drax the Destroyer turns up in a lovely purple tunic.
With Moondragon, who hasn't really changed her costume.
No.
But yeah, he's got a purple tunic and a purple skull cap. He's wearing a little skull clasp to hold his cape on. And... yeah, so I'm pretty sure the tats and bald look is a little bit better.
A little bit more macho. Just a little bit more
Very
macho.
Very much a costume of its time.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because he actually says, so let the Kree keep their silly medals and honors, who needs them? And then within four panels later, he's fallen into a coma. And he says, we're too late. We failed you, Captain Marvel. And this is one of the most iconic scenes in... comics history. It just says, just captioned with midnight, and it's everyone standing around his bed, the lights are dimmed, and that's pretty much it.
It's a great panel.
It is an amazing panel. And you'll probably see it as the cover art on our site.
Really? You know me that well?
Yeah. It's a panel that we also touched on when we were looking at Guardians of the Galaxy and Thanos Imperative, because they take that exact same panel, but at that moment, because we see what follows is he goes into kind of a dream state almost.
Yep.
He's slipping away and the statue of Thanos comes to life, although this is just really in his mind. And he's able to have one final battle as Captain Marvel, even if it's within his own existence, his own inner existence. He's actually able to fight for his life, fight for his, you know, one last time, rather than just fading away quietly.
I think his words are, I'm whole again.
I'm whole again.
Yeah.
And it's great because we've not seen him in action since the very start of the book. He's just been in bed for the whole time. And it's a wonderful moment. And it ends with Death, Captain Marvel, and Thanos walking hand in hand off into the light.
Skipping.
Following the yellow brick road. No, but it's a wonderful, beautiful, poignant moment. And then, you know, they say he's gone. They cover him with a sheet. And the final page is all of the Marvel U standing around a monument to him. And so ends Captain Marvel in a very heroic fashion. And I think that clip we played at the top was right. It's a good death because most superheroes go down fighting in some way. You compare it to the death of Superman, by which stage death was really starting to get overused in comics. Because the death of Superman was the start of the overused concept of death in comics. Everyone had to do something. Within a year of that, I think Batman's back was broken. And
just,
you know,
prior to his death was the death of Supergirl as well.
Death of Supergirl. All these things started happening. People starting and killed and coming back. A couple of years later, Green Arrow died and he eventually came back. Hal Jordan was, you know, his entire city was killed. You know,
in the mid-80s, we had Jean Grey come back.
Exactly so. Right. So what's beautiful about this is that he didn't die fighting, except in his own mind. He didn't die by bombs or bullets. He died by cancer, which, is, as that clip pointed out, is something that affects all of us, affects in some ways.
And it humanized him. Mm. Because for all intents and purposes, being part of the cosmic universe in particular, I mean, being part of a comic universe already is kind of this, you know, unreal, hyper-realistic thing. He's part of the cosmic universe, which takes it into a whole new level of out-there space antics. And they managed to take this very powerful character with cosmic powers and mega bands and everything else, and completely, in the space of 65 pages, humanify him. Mm. And basically make him a very, very frail, very vulnerable character who, as you said early on, touched everyone.
And that's the thing. I didn't, from the start of this book, not knowing much about Captain Marvel, to the end where, you know, tears are welling up in your eyes, it's kind of like, well, that's great storytelling right there.
Yeah.
From taking a character you know nothing about, telling you he has cancer 10 pages in, and then killing him off, for that to be affecting means it's a good human story.
And do you know what's really interesting? I think it's very interesting that Dark Knight Returns and The Watchmen, but particularly Dark Knight Returns, though, are given credit for making or adultifying comics. They're given credit for giving this new age of comics where things are slightly darker and they're telling more realistic stories, and it's not just the funny books anymore and blah, blah, blah. This predates them.
It does.
Several years.
Yeah, and it predates that whole extended format story by several years.
I don't think this book is given enough credit.
It was the start of the Marvel graphic novel line, which, as I said, accumulated, culminated in you know, 80-odd books, and included things like God Loves, Man Kills, and, of course, the classic Dazzle of the movie. which I think we have to do at a future show.
I think we do. I think we have to do that and Sensational She-Hulk, just because it just keeps coming back in my mind, the Sensational She-Hulk, and I've got to get it out of my system. So if I'm going to get it out of my system, I'm going to give it to you. So.
Okay, fair enough. I think I've got a copy somewhere, so yeah. I'll have a look at that. But you're right. I mean, it is a very underrated book, and I think it does turn up every now and then. It has been reprinted, so it is out there. It is still available. But because the Captain Marvel character has now been largely absent from the Marvel Universe, the effect that this book would have had on people who were followers of Captain Marvel for a very long time is now absent from modern comics readers. It's hard to gauge, you know, how this is received by modern audiences who don't know the character. You know, I mean, if they killed off Captain, when they killed off Captain America, there was a certain cynicism around it. There was another one, by the way.
There was a lot of cynicism about that, because we knew he'd be back.
You couldn't kill off Captain America. No. He was literally the flagship of Marvel.
Yeah, and that's exactly the same way I felt about the killing of Superman, and it's the same way I felt when they said the Batman was dying off. Remember when they introduced Batwoman Batwoman took over Detective Comics for a while because they killed off Batman. My first thought was, oh yeah, how long until he comes back?
And the reason I raised Superman before, apart from the fact that it started a new wave of deaths, was that when they killed Superman, they couldn't even do it from within the DCU. They actually had to invent a new character who was just an unstoppable killing machine who, if memory serves, was a genetic baby that was born and then, you know, repeatedly killed. Yeah, repeatedly killed until he was tough enough to kill anything. and then that was where Doomsday came from. Doomsday, this unknown character, took down Superman. And in many ways, that meant less because it was like, well, it's not as though Lex Luthor finally did it. Or you know, the more poignant stories came after that when it was like the funeral for a friend and World Without a Superman stories, when I think Lex did say like things like, I wanted it to be me to do it.
And
you know?
Interestingly enough, in the DC universe, the death of Superman was actually told so much better in basically an Elseworlds book, which was All-Star Superman, the Grant Morrison book, which also deals with the concept of the death of Superman, but it's not within the timeline, it's not within canon. But it is touching. It is so emotional because he's slowly dying, like Captain Marvel in this situation. And it's about this degrading of him, and he's slowly dying to the point where he basically just fades away. You know, I think he dives into the sun or something at the end. I can't remember how
this is what makes this so powerful. It's a superhero who dies in bed.
Yeah.
And he has no power.
And as you said at the very beginning, he doesn't go down punching. He doesn't go down fighting. Mm. He just goes down because he has cancer.
And you know, and which is what makes it a human story. Now, this is
a message to Marvel out there. Never bring this character back.
No, never. Look, if you bring back Captain Marvel, it's there is a new Captain Marvel now, and she's really good.
And she's basically, she got her powers from him. And
she actually, the reason they introduced, she felt it was time for someone to take on the Captain Marvel mantle again.
Because she was Ms. Marvel for a long time.
And she thought, no, to do his legacy proud.
And what's actually interesting is if you go back to that Chris Claremont run of X-Men, she's actually in issues shortly after we stopped our section.
Oh, right.
She's actually in like the fifth issue or sixth issue further on, but she's just known as Carol Danvers.
Well, exactly.
She's not even Ms. Marvel, you know?
Well, Kelly Sue DeConnick, who's currently writing that, is doing a marvelous job. Pardon the pun on that. And we do actually hope to have her on sometime in May.
It's a great comic.
So that's well worth reading. But this
what's interesting is that's also dealing with frailty.
Yes.
Because at the moment she's having the brain issues.
Yes.
And so she's basically, she can't fly at the moment. If she flies, she can have a brain tumor.
That's
true.
Yeah,
and so you sit there and go, wow, there's a curse to the Marvels as it stands. But it also is dealing with these human frailties, even with these superpowered people.
Which is what the Marvel characters have always really been good at. Because
yes, very much so.
What set them apart from, like, Superman is basically a god, which is why I always say that I have trouble relating to him.
Mm.
Whereas Spider-Man was always designed to be just a guy who got powers and has to still deal with his real life. You know, the X-Men, all the prejudice that's
heaped
on
mutations
them.
Exactly. There's arguments about the X-Men at the moment that I've actually, I think it was on one of Scott Johnson's podcasts, but they're actually talking, I think Scott Kurtz may have brought it up, but he was talking about the fact that in this day and age where we have the Avengers and every second person has superpowers, it doesn't matter how they came
about
them.
Why mutants still so,
but are mutants, why is it mutants are still, you know, basically so hounded? Because whether they were born with the powers or they fell in a vat of acid, what's the matter? They're still a weapon of mass destruction, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole mutant thing may be, maybe you've run its course by now. I'm not sure. It's what Marvel does.
Well, I think it's interesting because the parallel, the real world parallel now would probably be the whole gay marriage debate in the US, where they were talking about as a civil rights issue, but they're talking about what, even though majority of US citizens are now in favor of that, there is still this very vocal and very adamant prejudice against them. So it's kind of like saying in the 21st century, when so many people are accepting of this, why aren't, you know, we legalizing it? Well, same thing you can project onto the Marvel universe.
Yeah,
it's kind of like,
you
know, yes, a lot more people are accepting of it now. There are a lot more mutants and superheroes, but there's always going to be a vocal minority of right-wing people who just, and conservative people who think, no, this is wrong. It's an abomination of
I think I said this last week. I think the first thing the mutants have to do is stop calling themselves Homo Superior.
Yes.
Because it puts themselves on a pedestal, and I'm sure Homo sapiens are going, really? You think you're better than us?
You want to take this outside, buddy?
Sure thing, bub.
Look, I mean, I think I speak for both of us when I say this is a must read. It's a marvelous read.
We talk about essential reading. This is an essential read.
This is Comics 101.
Comics 101. Everybody, and an essential viewing is Ink. Go find this series.
Yes, it is. Still, you can stream it in a few places online, so you don't have to go and scurry around and try and find it. I just wish whoever produced Ink, Alter Egos Exposed, would release it on DVD, because it is a document that should be shown as part of people studying comics in literature courses.
And it was made 10 years ago, so I think we need a new series now.
Yes.
A lot's happened since then. So I think what we need now is a series 2.
Yeah.
And looking at how things have progressed.
Absolutely.
I think, they'll probably argue that, you know, three people and their dog watched it, and that's why there's no more, and that's why it's never being shown anywhere. But I think if they showed it now with the resurgence of comic books as popular as comic books are today, I think that show would be a massive
success. I agree 100%. David, that's it for this show.
What's next week? Oh, wait a minute.
Next week? There's nothing.
There's no next week's show, unfortunately. Now, remember last week we said we weren't sure if we're doing another show this week or what next week or whatever. We're here, so obviously we're doing a show here. Next week I will be in Melbourne. I've got some business to take care of in Melbourne. So we'll be back in 2 weeks.
And we'll be coming back in 2 weeks with our episode 55 will basically be our Iron Man 3 film special. We'll be looking at Iron Man 3. We'll be looking at the prequel comics. And we might have a look at some of the, just sort of a quick rundown of our favorite Iron Man stories and things like that.
We might also just recap a little bit over that Volume 4, I think it is, or Volume 5, the one that had the extremists in it.
Exactly,
A lot of the movie is based on that that runs.
As far as we know. Yeah. So, and some of the Mandarin stuff as well. Following that, we'll get back into Book of the Weeks, and we've got things like Hellboy, Seed of Destruction lined up, as well as Judge Dredd, Cursed Earth Saga. Mm. And we'll have a special guest on for that as well.
That'll be our first Judge Dredd.
It will be our first Judge Dredd, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. I used to love Judge Dredd when I was in my early 20s, actually. I was a really big fan of 2000 AD and Judge Dredd, so it'll be really fun to go back.
And we should say, if you're trying to get hold of a copy of this digitally, Cursed Earth Saga is available through the 2000 AD website for about £4 or £5.
It's £5.49 or something.
Oh,
like
I got
that.
It for $4.99.
I got it. It was just over £5. But the beautiful thing is you actually get a PDF and a CBR.
And it's all DRM free.
And it's all DRM free. So you get both versions and download them immediately. So.
Yeah. So go and get it. Then you've got no excuses for not reading that. Australia does get Iron Man 3 a little bit earlier than the rest of the world, yeah. So we'll be spoiling that for some people, but we don't care because we get it earlier. Which means we'll probably get the next one 2 months late. But yeah. Until then, people, this has been Behind the Panels. You can find everything we do on behindthepanels.net. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Mama, take this.